Hello and welcome to edition 278 of the NRF1 podcast, because Norfolk knows Formula 1. This is your F1 podcast straight out of Norfolk, UK. It is, of course, a back-to-back race week, so we're here to bring you a review of the Portuguese Grand Prix, I should probably say, along with the latest talking points from Formula 1 before the Spanish Grand Prix this weekend, which is not far away at all. I am Richard Baxter, hosting once again. With me tonight, we have two times Beckles Kart champion, the Oracle, Kyle Cumbers.
Good evening, Rich. How are you?
Good evening. Yeah, good. Thank you. Good. And you?
Yep, good. Yep. Enjoy the race of the weekend. So, yep, can't complain.
Ah, that's always good. Always good. Also joining us, we have Norfolk's new top motorsport engineer, as you probably heard in a previous episode, Callum's brother, Dan Springer, is here.
Hello.
Hiya. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. Thank you. Good. Thank you, yeah.
Good. You guys been keeping excited with the current F1 season and all the goings on?
Well, I mean, this last race we had in Portugal perhaps wasn't quite as dramatic as we were perhaps hoping. It was definitely the driest of the three, but it definitely had some intrigue. So, it's kept the excitement going.
Yeah, definitely. It's always that's what we love. All you need is some fans of motorsport and Formula One season, and we've got plenty to talk about for hours. So we're happy. Awesome. Well, we'll jump straight into it. We might as well start reviewing the Portugal Grand Prix. It is back-to-back races, like I just said a little while ago. So we're doing things a little bit differently in today's podcast, but not too differently. But like you kind of said, Dan, the Portuguese race, it was a good race, but in comparison to the first two races, it was nothing spectacular, was it?
No, not necessarily. I mean, if anything, the biggest drama was the battle at the front in the first half of the race, really. Mm. Once all of the pit stops had played out, that was kind of it for me. Especially that moment with Verstappen trying to go around the outside of the hairpin around Hamilton, and he more or less did the same, or the reverse rather, from turn one at Imola. So that was perhaps the biggest bit of drama. The other thing I think was quite a key moment was that Bottas just wasn't able to clear off into the distance, which, I mean, you normally tend to see from the lead car. So that kind of kept the first half quite interesting, really.
Yeah, definitely. It was an interesting thing with Bottas, actually, because I think we said it last time out, Kyle, that it was probably the most important weekend for him after like a tough Imola. But, you know, he did well. He took pole position. But, and you think, you know, hang on, is Bottas back? But then the race just kind of faded away from him.
Yeah, he sort of done the hard work. It was Saturday, getting on pole and then getting ahead off the line and being in lead after the first lap. You kind of thought, oh, it's his chance here. Also with Hamilton after the safety car period as well, dropping to third. You kind of thought maybe he's got a chance here to get away. But yeah, he just didn't have the pace. And I mean, Hamilton was in his sort of DRS zone for quite a long period before he overtook him. And yeah, you just feel like that was one that got away. And I think he made a comment after the race that, because he said he was sort of struggling the first half of the race, that he was kind of expecting Hamilton to overtake him because he was in his DRS zone for a while. I thought, well, that sounds quite negative sort of view that he's got on the race at the time. And yeah, he's just, I've probably said it before, but you feel like if Hamilton gets ahead, he'll win the race. But if Bottas gets ahead, there's always a decent chance that Hamilton will come past him. Yeah, just a bit of a missed opportunity for him. And obviously, he was a bit unlucky later on the race when he had the exhaust sensor. Was it exhaust sensor? Or some sort of sensor issue that he had. So he seemed to lose 5 or 6 seconds, but I didn't have the confidence that he'd be able to overtake Verstappen anyway. But it definitely feels like it was one that got away for him.
Yeah, definitely. And it was, it kind of highlighted almost the flaws in his ability. Obviously, he's in Formula One. You've got to be a brilliant driver to get to Formula One in the first place. No disrespect meant to him, of course. But he doesn't seem to have the kind of ability that these legendary drivers have, where give them any car and they will drive the wheels off it. You know, it's that kind of... we don't see that with Valtteri as such. And he seems to, I struggled. And that's the kind of end of his race.
He doesn't, he sort of... He's obviously quick, isn't he? Because his sort of qualifying record is... That's pretty decent compared to Hamilton, who's on the verge of 100 pole positions. He doesn't quite have that sort of X factor, does he? You can't see him pulling off moves that Hamilton and Verstappen can. He doesn't win races that he shouldn't win. You know, that means when the car maybe is not great or circumstances go against him, he's not able to pull out that result where he has to really drag a result out. But he is a pretty good number two, isn't he? So he probably doesn't like being called that, but he is, isn't he? He's there on the
road. You're kind of trying to think of other drivers who he reminds me of. And one I instantly think of is David Coulthard, where when you need him to win a race, he'll win it. When you need him to come second, third, fourth, whatever, he'll do it. He'll always threaten, but then won't always deliver.
Yeah,
I hope that's a fair statement for kind of David Coulthard as well. I don't know.
Well, DC was in our World Cup of number two drivers, wasn't it?
He was actually. Yeah, that's very true. Over the winter, so yeah, he did pretty well in that as well. So yeah, that's very true. That's very true. but obviously the race in Portugal, it all kicked off on, I think it was lap two as well. It was a kind of a silly mistake by the most experienced driver on the grid, of Kimi Raikkonen, changing a switch, and he was looking down and he crashed into the back of his teammate, broke his front wing, and ended up just having to park up. Bit of a shame, when the Alphas looked pretty decent for going for points this year as well.
Yeah, well, I mean, you kind of expect a bit better from Kimi, but. You know, it's so complex, the steering wheels nowadays, that it was bound to happen at some point. And to be quite honest, it's almost a testament to the skill of the drivers as a collective whole that we don't see this more often. So disappointing for them. But yeah, I mean, given seeing how well Giovinazzi was going for quite a good chunk of the race, it was... Yeah, almost left a few questions as to what Kimi might have been able to do. But, yeah, he can be a little bit hit and miss at times at the moment, especially since coming back from his rallying days. So, yeah, I wouldn't necessarily put it down as a foregone conclusion, but, I mean, they certainly would have been in with a chance. But, yeah, it's one of those things, I'm afraid.
Yeah, definitely. Like you say, I mean... You look at your road car, you drive along, you have all sorts of buttons on your steering wheel, you still have to look down and fiddle with those. When you're going at 200 miles an hour and, you know, the reaction speeds have to be that much sharper, looking down for that split second to change something, you can easily see how it happens.
Yeah, and you've also got the... Well, it's more of a hypothesis of mine as opposed to any sort of hard fact, but obviously when you're directly behind the driver... or the car in front, you're getting slipstream. But there is some sort of slipstream or suction from the side, depends on how big the outwash was. And I think there was some overlap, wasn't there? So there could have been an element of him kind of being sucked into a hole, really. And that probably didn't help. But I would imagine that's probably a small margin thing, as opposed to, you know, being able to turn the steering wheel left.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true. I never thought of it that way, but that makes sense. Cool. We have to give a shout out as well during the race to the Alpine team. No matter how much you want to call them Alpine, it's Alpine. But yeah, they had a really good race. So I think it was Esteban Ocon in qualifying. He got sixth place. So, essentially best of the rest. He was just behind the Ferrari of Carlos Sainz, who got fifth. And in the race, Ocon finished seventh, and Alonso had a late charge to get eighth place. They were looking pretty good, the Alpine team and drivers.
Yeah, Ocon's had a couple of good races, hasn't he? He was, as you said, a good qualifier and a good consistent race really the weekend. And Alonso obviously didn't have great qualifying, but made up for it with his late charge. So yeah, seventh and eighth was a pretty solid result for him after slowish start to the season. Still not used to the look of that car. Still looks a bit weird to me. bumps and lumps in interesting places. But yeah, sort of even last year, they were a little bit inconsistent, aren't they? So it'll be interesting to see if they can back up this weekend. Like some races last year, they were really quick, and then you thought, oh, they've made a big step forward, and then the following race, they'd be struggling to get into Q3.
Mm.
So it'll be interesting to see if they can back it up. But I'm pleased with Ocon. He's had a decent start, and you kind of think Alonso is gradually making his way sort of back to the top level that you maybe know he can do. Well, hopefully he can get back to that. So yeah, some interesting times at Alpine.
Yeah, definitely. And Alonso, his late charge and some of the overtakes, I think he said in an interview afterwards that he was driving angry because of a poor qualifying. But he looked more, you know, his old self. He was fighting for position. You didn't hear him on the radio complaining or anything. He was just driving the car as quick as he could and doing the best he could with it. It was a bit of old school Alonso we saw there.
Yeah, he definitely seemed to get his head down, didn't he? It was nice to see him back in that sort of form, but obviously it's all good learning for the Spanish Grand Prix, which obviously we have coming up this weekend, and his home Grand Prix. So yeah, it seems to have taken him a little bit of time to get back into the swing of things, but honestly I think that's kind of expected, especially given Ocon being the incumbent and is more likely to be up to speed with the development of the car and how it feels and the feel of the car and the being comfortable with the car is especially crucial in the sort of the tough moments, when you have a small snap of oversteer and you need to know how much steering lock to apply or how much throttle you can get away with applying to really catch that properly without losing a considerable amount of time. So but yeah, I mean, Portimao seems to be quite a slow to medium speed circuit, and I've heard reports that Alpine seem to be struggling with their medium speed downforce. So they've either turned a corner or Portimao is more leaning on the slow speed corners. I mean, there are quite a few that are the long, slow speed corners. So be interesting to see how they get on at Barcelona, because obviously most of the crucial corners where you can find the time are on the upper end of the cornering speed sort of spectrum. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they get on this weekend. So, yeah, fingers crossed for them.
Yeah, definitely. It seems to be a kind of one of those seasons where every single race that we go to, each track obviously has different challenges and everything and suits different cars. And it seems like every different race weekend we have, we're going to see a different team almost be best of the rest, because that midfield especially is so tightly compact. It can change one week to another. I guess the track layout and how suited their car is to a specific track makes all the difference.
Definitely. I mean, we've also got the fact that, well, Barcelona I think is going to be a little bit warmer than it has been in Portimao this week, so be interesting to see what the dynamic does in that sense from the obviously the tyre warm-up perspective. It seemed that Ferrari were really struggling with their tyre warm-up and they didn't even like the medium tyre either. It seemed like they grained it up too quickly. So that's going to change some of the dynamic really, isn't it? It ebbs and flows over the season, but even with the sort of stunted development, seems that's going to swing quite wildly and perhaps even more so this year.
Yeah, definitely. And of course we mentioned there's quite a lot of overtakes in Portimao. There's one that really stood out, and I'm almost sorry to have to bring this up, Dan, with your affiliations, but but we have to give give it a mention. Mick Schumacher in the Haas overtook a car. it sounds harsh saying it like that, but the Haas haven't been great this year. They're obviously still learning. But Mick did overtake Nicholas Latifi in the Williams towards the end of the race. Obviously, Latifi must have been struggling because he locked up round wide and Mick just kind of went straight through. But it's quite nice to see him getting a bit of, you know, quality overtaking action during a race, because he's kind of, we haven't seen what he's had in Formula One yet.
Mm. Yeah, well, I mean, it seems to me that the Williams is definitely struggling in the windy conditions, and I think that's quite consistent with what we saw in pre-season testing. So the claims of the peaky downforce has definitely come back to bite them, especially considering that George was really on the verge of Q3 and dropped all the way back to, I think it was 16th or 17th, and he almost dropped back like a stone, really. It was quite a sustained dropping. So, yeah, it's... otherwise, I think Mick did a good job there. I think I've seen some of the replays and that came up. And looks like he kind of just put the pressure on Latifi and waited for him to make the mistake. So, all good considered learning. It seems to be quite consistent with Mick's previous behaviour, and he seems to be taking it one step at a time. So, pleased for him. And also, if you consider how far ahead of he was of... he who should not be named, and he's doing a solid job, so I'm pleased for him.
Yeah, definitely. We need to mention a couple of other bits from the race. One of them being how, like you say, he who shall not be named managed to get a time penalty, even though he was last anyway. But simply the blue flags, and that. There's two phrases that will get Formula One fans around the world riled and in heated debate for absolute days on end, I'm sure. Track limits and blue flags. Now, track limits we'll come on to, but blue flags, obviously, I've nearly said his name. He was given blue flags. He basically ignored them to the point where he essentially cut up Sergio Perez, who at that point was in the lead. So he quite rightly got a 5-second time penalty. Just silly driving. Then we had the blue flags where Hamilton was overtaking Sergio Perez for the lead because Perez hadn't pitted. And Hamilton's calling for blue flags, thinking he's lapping the guy. he didn't know he wasn't in the lead. Classic.
I think the Haas engineer took the blame for the his driver's not getting out of the way, but you do wonder if that was just kind of trying to protect his driver. But yeah, I did find the Hamilton one quite amusing. It's maybe how he sees all number two Red Bull drivers that, you know, any time he comes across them in a race is when he's lapping them. But I did find that quite funny. I'm slightly surprised that they didn't tell him, or if they did tell him, he didn't listen to the fact that he was actually in second place at that point. It was a slight bizarre one, but it was quite funny.
Definitely. And the track limits we need to mention because but there was all sorts of things said by Red Bull. They said they've now been cost, was it a race win, a fastest lap and a pole position, was it, because of track limits? Martin Brundle wrote on Sky Sports an article responding to it and said, well, read the rules, read what Michael Massey had put out. It was clear what the rules were on track limits. And there was revised notes on the Saturday, which Martin Brundle said he saw with big pink revised writing to say about turn 14, which is, of course, where Verstappen ran wide. It seems like the debate should be over, and you always think, you know, track limits, they're straightforward, just stay on the track. But it's so much more complicated than that because it seems to change at every single race. Sometimes the white line is the edge of the track. Sometimes the curb is the edge of the track. It's a funny old thing. And it feels like a battle that you can never win because ultimately no one's ever going to be happy.
Yeah, well, it definitely needs to be applied consistently. And obviously the more draconian of the fans amongst us are calling for please just use the white line and be done with it. But sometimes it may just not be that simple for reasons beyond our control. Maybe that there just aren't enough stewards to police it. And hence some of the corners are kind of being given a free rein. But I think we can't let the point slide that Verstappen has now cost himself numerous points, probably at least 8, probably even more, through track limits. So yeah. If he's not careful, he's slowly going to throw this championship away. I think that's a very important point that we need to make note of, because these are all crucial points, especially when you're going up against a 7-time world champion. So as good as Verstappen is, yeah, he's going to have to get a rein in on that, because that's going to cost him.
Yeah, and to be fair, he wasn't the only one, because there was in the last race in Imola, Yuki Tsunoda, he was warned several times, and I think he eventually got a penalty for track limits. And in this race, he was warned twice. So he was given the 2 warnings, and then the team said, you know, be careful of track limits at turn whatever it was. And then he did it again, and the team said, okay, no more chances, do not run wide. And had to really kind of say to him, it was almost kind of plead with him, just dude, please just stop running wide, just keep it on between the lines. And they just had to say, and I mean, he didn't get a penalty this time out, but he seems to try and push the boundaries a bit.
That's quite early in the race as well, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, 2 races now. Apart from that, you didn't really see much of him on Sunday, did you? He's been quite entertaining the first few races, but he was, apart from his going off track, he was quite quiet the weekend. But yeah, he definitely does need to follow the guidelines at the drivers' meetings, cause, or drivers' briefings, because he does seem to be pushing, as you say, pushing the limits.
Yeah. But I know they during like the first lap of the race, they always say, "Oh, you know, we'll ignore track limits because there's cars all over the place anyway. You kind of have to expect it. You know, if someone's going to run wide to maybe avoid someone else, so you can understand it then." But to, like you say, to be that early in the race, I guess they wouldn't have counted lap one as well. It's, you just think, well, how many times is he doing this?
Hey, on the track limits, because there was a bit of, I know, a sort of Red Bull annoyance. They were Lando Norris when he overtook Sergio Perez, and they were, I think Sergio Perez was also moaning that he ran wide at turn 4.
Yes.
I haven't seen that or seen a replay of that at all. I was wondering if either of you have done.
No, I was a bit confused by that, to be honest. Yeah, I haven't seen any video evidence. So, but I mean, it's kind of a moot point, really, in the end. He got past. So
yes, yeah. Was it turn 5 he actually overtook him, didn't he? Sort of down the hill a bit, but
it was kind of interesting because Perez overtook Norris in the end, and it all looked okay. And it was quite a few laps after the turn 4 incident. And at the time, I was like, oh, he's let him through. And you watch the replays, and it was like, well, he doesn't seem to be going as quick. And then I think Ted Kravitz said in the Sky coverage, like, oh, he has let him through, but is that not just because his tyres are knackered? That, you know, the pit window for the softs opens in 1 lap, 2 laps time. But then Norris seemed to be going round and still had pace. And then he did like another 10 laps before he pitted, basically. So it seemed a bit of a strange one. It's like, did he let him through? Did he not? Was it a quiet call from the team to say, yeah, let him through or something? It wasn't really said about, was it?
No. Yeah, bizarre one.
Definitely. Cool. I think that pretty much wraps up all the news from Portugal instead, unless you've got anything massive you can think of quickly.
Well, I mean, the last little thing from me is we never really heard anything about Verstappen potentially speeding in the pit lane, because obviously on one of his stops, he went in basically all guns blazing.
Yes.
And we never really heard anything from that. So, I mean, you can probably assume that it was fine, but that looked a little bit suspect to me.
he really was locking up, wasn't he, big time? So,
yeah.
On the way in.
Yeah, we didn't hear anything of that. So, Yeah, I don't know whether they let that one slide on the carpet or whether that was fine.
Maybe they didn't want to cost us a race, so they left it. Oh, I don't know. But yeah, that's a good point. Good point. Cool. Okay, moving on. Of course. Now, last week we need to mention, we were obviously mentioning about Twitter and Twitter replies and things like that. Now, we have to give a quick apology to Matt Johnson. I hope you're listening and hope you're well. Because you tweeted us a couple of questions and points you wanted us to discuss in the last podcast. But we had a weird glitch on our Twitter page where it showed two replies to a tweet, but we could not view them, so it looked like there were none. So don't know what was going on there, but I hope we covered them all okay. But just to kind of pick them up now quickly, you said one of the best starts to a season in many years in regards to excitement and drama and not just being a Mercedes dominated affair. Very true. Totally agree with that. In your opinion, who is punching above their weight? Who is underachieving? Who is where they deserve to be currently? So guys, punching above their weight underachieving. Who have you got? I'd like to nominate one team I can think of straight away for underachieving so far. And that would be Aston Martin.
Yeah, I agree with that. Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that.
And what about punching above their weight? Have you got anyone in mind who thinks punching above their weight?
This is a tricky one, isn't it?
Because I feel like I could turn around and say either of the Alpha teams. But then they're also there because they've made improvements at the same time.
Yeah, and equally you could say the same about McLaren. I wouldn't necessarily say they're punching above their weight. If anything, they're kind of there on merit. This is a tricky one, actually. That's a really good question.
We'll have a think. I'm looking through the teams.
Well, if we had to do it on a team-by-team basis, I think that becomes a little bit more tricky. But if you can do it on a driver basis, then... if you narrow it down to a Saturday, then you can obviously say that George Russell is punching above his weight.
Yeah, true.
To the point where it's almost funny that he managed to get into Q3 over the weekend.
Yeah, it was very close. I couldn't believe that. It was. Yeah, I would love to see it, but hopefully there's a few updates in the pipeline and I'll get him there.
Yeah. Underachieving wise, I think it's still going to be Ferrari as well. That's another one we kind of have to... take note of, and then obviously you have Haas, so yeah, as well as Aston Martin, you kind of got a few options there.
Yeah, very true. Cool. And the other question Matt had said, do you feel the criticism of George Russell has received is justified? Personally, his reaction wasn't ideal, as he admitted, but I don't think he was in the wrong, as he seems to have been globally slammed for it. He had pace, DRS and room before the Bottas twitch, right? We did discuss, my gosh, I can't even use my words today. We did discuss that last week, so I hope we kind of covered it all. But I think George's response, I mean, especially he did a Sky interview with Lando Norris, and his response in that seemed to be just great and very professional, I thought, as well.
Yeah, well, he certainly came out very bullish after the race in the media pen, didn't he? And I was watching that kind of thinking, you probably end up regretting that, and I think he probably has. It certainly seemed very much heat of the moment, so I think he's probably learned a lesson from that. But I think there's also a small dig from Toto as well with the Clio Cup joke. That's probably sort of played a little bit more on his mind, as well as perhaps having a bit more of an in-depth conversation with Toto about it, because it certainly seems to me like he's got the Mercedes drive next year, from what I've read. So yeah, I think it's been a steady climb down from the heights that he reached in the media pen straight after the race. But is it justified? No, not really, because drivers make mistakes and he just so happened to hit a Mercedes, which perhaps elevated the I guess the the Ferrari around it. So, yeah, I'm not convinced that it is justified, to be honest.
No. Very true. Agree. Cool. So anyone else, if you have any other questions, opinions, thoughts you want to send our way, get us to discuss on the podcast, please do so. Just get in touch with us. There are many ways. And you go to Patreon, patreon.com/NRF1. You'll usually find the full edition of the podcast, including the Of the Weekend Awards, Norfolk Notebook, and NRF1 Pit Stops. Like I said earlier, we're doing things a little bit differently today. So there isn't a Patreon podcast as such, rather than just one free-to-all, just because it's back-to-back races and we need to get a quick turnaround in. But I'm sure you guys understand, so thank you. Social media, give us a follow and get in touch on there. Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. The handle for all three is at TheNRF1. You can email us as well. The address is nrf1podcast@gmail.com. And yeah, we're going to be doing some more live podcasts, I think, in the future. So we are on Twitch. Just search TheNRF1 and you can come and give us a watch on there. But we will, of course, let everyone know through all our socials kind of when we're going to go live.
Hello everyone, this is Jake Humphrey here. You're listening to the best Formula One podcast from the best county in the world, the NRF1 podcast. And I wasn't paid any money to say that.
No, I did give you some beers.
Okay, so next up, now as a special treat, as it's such a quick turnaround between races, there's no better way to wrap up our Portugal Grand Prix review but with our Of the Weekend Awards. So, guys, we're going to go in and we're going to throw out our nominations for the Rodolfo Gonzalez Driver of the Weekend Award.
Tricky one.
I think it is, yeah.
I was going to probably Lando Norris, but I'm going to go for Esteban Ocon. That's somebody different.
Yep.
Strong qualifying and strong race.
Yeah, I think I'm going to have to go for Lando Norris. He's done quite a solid job this year, hasn't he? Especially against Ricardo, who is a good peddler by all means, isn't he? He's got a reputation. So, yeah, definitely Norris for me. He's punching above his weight, isn't he?
Mm. Yeah, he's been really, really good and interesting watching him. And something you have to say is, you know, McLaren, they had signs of Norris last year. And you kind of think, well, who's the team leader? And you kind of think, well, Carlos Sainz, more experience. You go to this season, you got Ricardo and Norris, and you think, who's the team leader? Ricardo has got more experience, even though he's a new driver to the team. But in actual fact, Norris has really led that team on and is really kind of proving a point, especially this season.
Yeah, he's improved. This is his third year now, isn't it? He seems to have improved each year. He had quite a strong end to last season, didn't he? Just double checking, he finished fifth in Abu Dhabi and he had a fourth in the first Bahrain Grand Prix. And if he can beat Danny Rick, then his sort of, yeah, if you beat Danny Rick, you're pretty quick, aren't you?
Yeah, so, definitely.
Yeah, and I think he's only 21. You sort of forget how young he is still. So, but yeah, if he can continue this form, you kind of think Danny Rick will get quicker as the season goes. But see, if he can beat him, then he's going to be sort of pushing the top elite drivers of the on the grid. But yeah, hopefully he can, as from a British motorsport point of view, I hope he can continue.
Yeah, definitely. And just one quick thing while we're talking about Lando Norris, because this drives me absolutely crazy, but they keep saying to him, because he likes to stream games on Twitch and have fun, mess around and stuff. People say, oh, you know, he needs to concentrate on his racing and concentrate on the racetrack and blah, blah, blah. He's a young lad. He goes through all the stress of this professional, high adrenaline, high speed, high stress, I bet, as well, sport. He goes through a hell of a lot. It's a lot to have in your personal life. He wants to play some games and have fun with friends. Let him. He's a young lad. He's 21, for goodness sake. You got to let him have his time to himself and time to enjoy himself. So I mean, why not? Why not? You know, let
him. Well, everyone's entitled to free time, aren't they? And whatever they do in their free time is up to them. But I think perhaps one of the best things about the big lockdown last year in the spring, 12 months ago, was seeing him, George and Alex on a Twitch stream.
Yeah.
More or less every night, and that was quite heartwarming, I have to say.
That was. And Charles Leclerc even got involved in that, and there were some brilliant moments. I think the Euro truck driving simulator, brilliant, love it.
I didn't watch, I sort of don't watch much, but the best bit was when his girlfriend was knocking on the door.
Yeah.
And he can hear her. So did she sign up to his Twitch page? Paid? Yeah.
She subscribed to him on Twitch. It was like, oh, I need to let her in.
The whole thing about Lando Norris sort of, not concentrating or whatever on his career, as long as he does his job and works hard when he needs to, as Lewis Hamilton has proven in the last so many years, you can have lots of distractions,
yeah,
and other hobbies outside of Formula One, and it can still work. And sometimes it's quite healthy, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, I like to think that this sort of criticism is coming from the right place, in the sense that people just want him to do well.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, I can understand it from that point of view. But he, he has his free time. He's entitled to do what he likes with it.
Yeah. I suppose maybe if you're the team boss and you're trying to call your driver for something important and he doesn't answer because he's streaming on Twitch, it could probably get a bit frustrating, though.
But if he's up all night racing or whatever online and he's got Dan the simulator the next day, then obviously that's not ideal, but I'm sure he's not doing that.
Yeah. He's a model professional, I'm sure. So, cool. Anyway, bit sidetracked there, but the awards. Next award, the Team Lotus Team of the Weekend. Who have you got?
I kind of want to give it to Mercedes, really. Where they were in testing and where they are now. I think the sort of conditions maybe helped Mercedes, and it'd be interesting to see them in Spain and maybe Monaco. But it just seems such a well-run team, don't they? And just, you can... Yeah, just... You think you've knocked them back and they just come back, don't they? So yeah, I'll give it to them.
Cool.
Can we choose like a sub-team to the team?
Of course.
Well, I'm going to go for the Red Bull pit crew, because they were knocking out some sub-2-second pit stops on a consistent basis. So that's my vote.
That's true. Actually, they are a pit crew. They're a pit team, I suppose you can say. So I'll let you have that one. I'll let you have that. Cool.
That's quite a good point about it, because Mercedes pit stops, they seem to play it safe, don't they?
Mm. Yeah.
Compared, I sort of mentioned during the race, they seem to play it a little bit safer than Red Bull, and I suppose they've been able to the last couple of years, haven't they? With them. How far they're ahead, but it'll be interesting to see as the season goes on, if the battle remains as close as it is, if whether Mercedes will have a big push on their pit stops. I'll see if they can reduce them to close to what Red Bull can do.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. I wonder what the fastest anyone has ever done it, like off the record, not during the race or something. Practice one, that'd be interesting. Cool.
Also, did Williams have some sort of charity thing they're doing, the pit stops? They have to do 100 pit stops.
The Captain Tom 100.
Oh, that was it. Yes. So I assume they done it in the end.
I don't know. I didn't actually hear if they'd finished it, but I would assume they probably did.
Yeah.
You'd hope so. Cool. Next award is the Pastor Maldonado of the Weekend Award.
Oh well. He who shall not be named. for his nearly taking out the leader.
I'm going to be a little bit harsh. And with Max Verstappen, not based on his speed. But his comments afterwards, when he said, I hope they never go back to Portimao again. He doesn't like the track because it's too slippery, or maybe track limits issues. But I thought it was, I love that track. I hope they do go back. So I was a bit surprised by that comment, or by them comments. But
I'd rather go to Portimao than to the circuit of Catalonia, to be honest.
Exactly, yeah. But yeah, I thought it was strange comments from Verstappen.
Yeah, definitely. Very strange. Cool. The final award is the Giuliano Salvi Moment of the Weekend Award.
That's got to be Verstappen trying to hang it around the outside of Hamilton. Which rather annoyingly, this is what gets my goat, is the TV director didn't even let us watch it live. And then when they did show the replays, they showed it of Verstappen's nose cam, so you couldn't see bugger all.
That's a good point, yeah.
You just see a car running
wide. Replays from Twitter, so yeah, that's... Well, my Pastor Maldonado second vote is going to have to be the TV director.
Cool. Carl, do you agree? You got another one?
I thought actually Hamilton's move on Bottas, so just won the race. That's definitely a shout out. Oh, what a move.
Yeah.
Especially when it's on your teammate as well. Yeah, he sort of had to hang around the outside. And yeah, to be the race winning move, I was. Yeah, it's been my moment in the race.
I kind of have to throw in a little bit of a point that I think Bottas made that a little bit easy for him. And certainly everyone who defended on the inside in turn one seemed to make the overtake on them easier for the other person. It seems like if you take the outside there, you have the right of way, basically. Even though you are going around the outside, you should have the racing line.
Yeah.
And especially given it's such a quick corner and there's a big sausage curb on the inside, so...
Yeah, I suppose if you go to the inside to defend, you've instantly made it, so you have to go half the speed through the corner because it's that bit tighter.
Yeah, but I mean, it's kind of it's a tricky situation, because if you don't defend, then if they have the inside line, are they going to get past? Are they not? I mean, we didn't actually... Well, I didn't actually see anyone try and not necessarily defend in the traditional sense. Everyone I saw basically defended the inside and then got overtaken. But it'd be interesting to see if we go back next year, that if someone doesn't defend in the traditional sense, whether that actually is more effective in turn one.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting. That's a good point. Definitely something to keep an eye out for. Cool. Yeah, that was a good shout, Kyle, actually. I like that one. Also, I have to give a shout out for a moment of the weekend to Norfolk's own Martin Brundle, because in FB2 he was talking about the wind and he referred once again a fen blow. So
that's especially dedicated to our friends from the West Norfolk district. So.
Oh yeah, shout out Kings Lynn and surrounding areas. Cool, awesome. I think that wraps up Portugal nicely. So we'll move on and we'll jump straight in to some quick news, because it was announced just before the Portugal Grand Prix, Istanbul is going to return this season in place of Canada, who has dropped off. Bit of a shame, because I think we all love the Canada circuit, but hopefully we'll be back there next year and we'll have a banger of a race to go with it. The other big news we have to mention, which was announced today, is that Mercedes have a new driver, sort of. Romain Grosjean is getting his one-off outing at the French Grand Prix. So in front of his home crowd, he will get to drive, I think, last year's Mercedes, just as a test, and just so he can have one more outing in a Formula One car. So I think that's going to be really nice to see. And chuffed for him, and well done to Mercedes for making that happen.
Yeah, it's going to be a nice little tribute, that, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
Especially with it being at the French Grand Prix. So
yeah,
if that gets cancelled, then I'll be gutted for him.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, Toto sort of stuck to his word, didn't he? So yeah. Nice touch.
Yeah, definitely. Look forward to seeing that. Now, we better move on, because Spanish Grand Prix, like we said. Guys, most important weekend for who would you say?
Alonso, probably, I would say.
Yeah,
especially in qualifying. The pressure's going to be on him, isn't it?
Yeah, that's true.
I'll go for Danny Rick.
Yeah, that's a good show.
Also probably in qualifying, and yeah, it's a little bit closer to Mr. Norris. I think he'll be desperate to do that as well, because if it sort of continues this way, then you can see the team sort of leaning towards Norris. I think Danny Rick would like to make his or stamp his authority on the team quite early, but at the moment it's not happening. So yeah, big race for him.
Yeah, definitely. I'm just looking through last year's results. So yeah, last year the race was won by Hamilton, then Verstappen, then Bottas. So the same top three that we see quite often. Do you think it will kind of it will be a similar pecking order? Do you think it will still be Mercedes ahead of Red Bull, or do you think Red Bull are going to come back with something here? Obviously, after what was a, we could say a difficult Portuguese Grand Prix, I suppose.
I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how the high versus low rake debate is going to play out again, and whether Mercedes have managed to get on top of that. Because obviously Barcelona is kind of more on the high speed end, especially in the corners, and Portimao is kind of the opposite of that. So yeah, if they can squeeze out a good result versus Red Bull this weekend, then you can probably comfortably say they've got on top of any issues that they've had. So yeah, be interesting to see what happens there.
Yeah, definitely. And one big question: could we see an exciting Spanish Grand Prix for once?
I think it's unlikely, isn't it?
When was the last time we had a good Grand Prix at this circuit in Spain? Anyway,
well, my vote would probably be the 2012 Spanish Grand Prix, which Ped will probably murder me for.
Yeah. So you had when was it, the Hamilton-Rosberg collision?
Oh, that was 16, wasn't it? That was when Verstappen won on his debut race.
Yeah.
For Red Bull.
That wasn't too bad. It was a bit of drama at the start, but...
If I remember rightly, actually, Kimi was chasing him down mostly to the end, I think. Yeah. So yeah, that's probably the most recent one.
Yeah. I'm just a bit bored of the place now. they've adjusted one of the corners, haven't they? Is it corner or turn 10?
Yeah, well, turn 10's now kind of more in the traditional style, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's gone back more towards what the bikes were using.
Yes. A bit more of a loop.
So
sort of.
It's kind of probably shortened that braking zone a little bit and probably made it harder to overtake. So.
Yeah. I did hate that corner beforehand, the corner 10, the sort of clumsy little corner, but yeah, I can't imagine that's going to be easier for the cars to follow, or any easier for cars to follow around that track. Yeah, it's just... like I said before, I'm just a bit tired of the place, really.
Well, I mean, it seems to me like they're swapping Barcelona out for Miami, so that'll be interesting to see how poor that circuit is, because the renders I've seen of it and the sim lap that they did on Assetto Corsa, it looks like Vietnam cross Sochi, so doesn't bode well, does it?
Yeah. Oh, dear. Okay. Something that might spice the Spanish Grand Prix up, though, I just looked up, is the Barcelona weather. And it says 20, 21 degrees, which is kind of expected. But on Sunday, it says scattered showers. And at 1 o'clock, it's a 21% chance of precipitation, which goes up to 47% at 4 p.m. So it gets higher as the race goes on. So there could be a chance of a scattered shower.
Let's hope.
Well, at the time of recording, it is only Wednesday, so you know the Mateo France or whoever's doing the weather forecast could probably update that sooner or later.
Yeah, no doubt they will. I'm hoping. I mean, it looked like we could get some weather in Portugal, which it never came around. So you never know. I'm hoping. Hopefully, we'll get a bit of weather to spice it up, and we'll be in for an absolute banger of a race.
Yeah, we need a bit of a Mediterranean blow.
definitely if such a thing exists, I don't know. Cool, awesome. Well, with that, I think we are wrapped up, so we will return with episode 279, which will be our Spanish Grand Prix review and a look ahead to the following Monaco Grand Prix. But in the meantime, thank you Kyle and Dan for joining me. It's been a good one.
Thank you, Rich.
Thank you.
Thank you, of course, everyone, for listening. This has been the NRF1 podcast. We'll see you next time. Until then, goodbye.